listener production.
Yes, hello and welcome to the Jock and Jerno podcast. It is finals time and I have a very happy, victorious Collingwood superstar midfielder, Scotty Pendlebury with me. I'm Jay Clark and you'd be happy as Larry, wouldn't you, Scotty? Week off, home preliminary final.
It's an ideal scenario, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Yeah, no, it was amazing game to be part of Thursday night and then, just the finals games are so emotional as well. Like, they're obviously physical, but just the emotion in them is so high.
Yep.
It was nice to get the win and then, just sort of kick back Friday and know you have the weekend off. And, now we can just really prepare and get ready for a home prelim in a couple of weeks.
We've got a big show ahead. We're going to be speaking about your teammate, Braden Maynard, who's going to take up a lot of copy inches this week, of course. Maybe the biggest tribunal case in, I don't know, since Barry Hall, potentially one of the biggest in years. There's no doubt about that. You talk about emotions in finals football. I saw you on the final siren, mate. My eyes were drawn to you. You've let out some jubilant roars over your time. I reckon you might have set a new high with this one. You went with the double fister, the bent over, double fister, guttural roar in celebration. We're going to go through the last couple of minutes in a second.
Say guttural.
Yeah, guttural, like deep
no,
roar.
No, I did. I gave it everything I had. I think it was
what was that?
I think
how
was
the feeling?
Relief? It's a little bit of relief, but you just know what's on the line. Like, it's, as I said, they're so emotional. You know what you're playing for. Mm. And it's big to win on that first week. Finals are so hard to win. And last year we lost that first final to the Cats by 5 points. And this year we're on the right end. I think we won by 7 points. But it's just, the emotion's high. You know what you're playing for. It's finals. You were there. You would have felt how big it felt. So
I think I heard you.
Yeah, just let it out. It feels good. It's almost like you're hungover the next day and you need to have a spew. You just bend over in the power stance, let it go, and then... Yeah, back. So, as I said, it was an awesome, awesome performance and, happy to be sitting here and through to a prelim.
I was covering it for the Herald Sun. I was on the edge of my seat. The Collingwood fans were on the edge of their seats. You talk about the emotion. Watching you in the last couple of minutes or watching back is fascinating because pretty much, wherever that ball went in that Collingwood back line, and you were pinned down. Like, remember when you were a kid and one of your brothers had you pinned down on
typewriter.
On the floor? Collingwood was pinned down in that back half as they came again and again, wave and wave of attacks. And you were there literally amid every possession directing traffic. Now, I know that's a usual role for yourself, but this was something else I felt. And it started at I think there was 3 minutes 40 left. Jack Ginnivan gets a free kick in the middle of the square. I think he gets a high tackle from Trent Rivers.
Holding the ball,
yep. Sorry.
Yep.
And then, but he goes... He kicks it straight to Stephen May on half forward flank, which is in a hot spot instead of going wide. Yeah. I looked at Steele side bottom over the other wing.
Going off his trolley.
He went bananas at Guinea saying go wide. So what in that moment can you reflect, without trade secrets, can you reflect on what should have happened in that situation?
Like, it's not even trade secrets. I think every club's trying to do it. But because you know that both sides have those minute boards up. So there's like three, I think.
Yep.
I think Melbourne had four up, we had three up. So that's when you always know it's somewhere in between.
Yep.
So ideally there, you're just trying to get as many seconds off the clock as possible. So, I threw the ball back to Braden, hoping he would let it go and it would steal 10 seconds there. And just trying to help and direct. So, ideally we would have played that ball wide to Steele, who was free, and then make Melbourne press forward. You don't really want to have to kick to a contest straight away. But to Melbourne's credit, in that last quarter, they took away a lot of our uncontested marks. Obviously, we had a 20-something point advantage, so they had to do the chasing. But, on reflection, we'll learn. I think I heard Fleiss after the game, like, we'll still learn from this and grow and get better and managing the clock. I thought we defended extremely well. Wasn't too many of their entries that I thought were super clean, like pinpoint to a forward. A lot of it was high ball and giving guys like Darcy, Murph, Howie great looks. But we've got to be better at getting out. You can't just sit there and hope to survive under like a wave of pressure. So you still got to try and go forward, but as much sort of uncontested, move it up. And then when you really have to, bail out wide, ideally, to try and get a stoppage or something like that. Yeah, I still felt like we played the last few minutes fairly well.
There were some big moments. I know Brody Mychek took a big mark on the wing. Again, Ginnivan was busy, so he was injected in the sub and had, so I know he probably might have wanted to have that moment back, but he had some big moments. Isaac Quaynor took a couple of really big marks going back with the flight. So what was it? What were you? How were you feeling back there as the ball was coming over and over and over again? And I know some of your guys really stood up, but what there must have been a lot of tension throughout that time.
Yeah, there was. You're just trying to execute, like in the midfield, especially with Gorn, the way he was sort of getting into a groove, wasn't he? Like mm-hmm. in that last quarter,
yeah.
Around stoppages, you're just trying to cover the real dangerous space. So, and that's why Guinea was involved in so much of the play because you know Max was hitting it back into the corridor and
yep.
Guinea was up through that area and there's just a wave of numbers sort of surging. It was like they were sort of running NFL plays at stoppages, mm. you know, shooting through the front, shooting through the corridor. And with Gorn's ability to get it there, then you're trying to put pressure on and just give our backs half a look. You just really didn't want to try and give them any clean ball coming out of stoppages going forward. So I thought Guinea played exceptionally well, Paddy Lipinski in that role as well, and then just trying to battle. But, yeah, mm-hmm. then you have moments of individual brilliance, like the centre bounce loss that goes to Isaacs mm-hmm. one-on-one, sort of pushes off, stands in the hole, Frisch is coming, just didn't flinch, yep. bang, takes a massive mark. And he's a 21-year-old kid, is he?
Yep.
Like, imagine how much he grows and believes in himself mm-hmm. now. And then he takes another mark 2 minutes later on the half-back flank that mm. kills the game. I think he kicks it and then that's when we win. So, yeah, just moments like that guys, you always want to know if you can do it. Can I actually stand up? We had some guys that did it and that will take so much confidence from those because those moments are very easy to, you know, Isaac could very easily just turn and box out his guy and hope Darcy wins his one-on-one. Mm. He puts his body on the line potentially to get absolutely suitcased,
mm.
takes it and that saves... You know, that saves a goal or saves a score.
Jamie Elliott took a mark floating back in defence also, off a kick from Max Gorn, which was absolutely huge. You talked about the stoppages before. You played quite a distinctive role inside that centre square. You sat back, you were the sweeper a lot of the time. And watching that, I thought back to the 2021 grand final when Melbourne annihilated the Western Bulldogs in that situation. As you said, shooting through, going through the front of the stoppage. They can score from stoppage. That was the main threat. So it did look like you were sitting back covering for that. Was that your role throughout the game?
The centre bounce is, because it's 6-6 and 6 now, even watching the Brisbane-Port game, like Brisbane scored so heavily from stoppage mm. up there. And stoppages are becoming a really key in games with the scoring that can happen from there. So
Brisbane kicked 13-3, yeah, I think, in stoppage.
And so both sides are the same thing. You don't really want the ball coming out the front door because it just stresses your defence so much. Like that extra 5 metres versus them going back 5 metres, mm. you know, it's a 10-metre difference. It doesn't sound like a hell of a lot, but that ball now drops to your high half backs instead of your deep defenders. So, yeah, try not to let any side out the front door. And surprise, surprise, guess where we're trying to exit? We're trying to exit through the front door. So, yeah, everyone knows it, but you've got to be able to go and execute. And that final Melbourne Bulldogs from 21, was it? Like that, the game changed when I think they got 3 centre bounce breaks in a row, like Jackson, mm-hmm. Petrarca, 3 goals. Like that's huge in finals footy. So, I thought we managed that part fairly well, but, you know, their midfield really got going in that last quarter.
Certainly did. The inside 50s, what were they, 19-4 in the late with 2 minutes
parked
to go.
Parked the bus, didn't we?
You did park the bus. Almost maybe a little bit too early. Maybe you're trying to take the game on a little bit more.
Yeah, well, Jamie Elliott said to me at 3-quarter time, so I hope we're not too defensive here. Like, let's keep going. And I was like, no, we'll be fine. We won't. And then I was like, yeah, we actually got a little bit defensive, didn't we? So, and as I said, like, we didn't execute everything perfectly, but we executed a lot right. So it's like any game of footy. Like, we'll go in this week and there'll be parts that we can really learn and grow and be better again for when our next game is. And there's parts that we will celebrate, like the looks we got. Like, we'll celebrate that sort of stuff. And then how can we get better in these areas?
You parked the bus, the motorbike, the helicopter, everything was back then, mate. Don't worry about that. So we're going to talk about some cameos in a second. Braden Maynard, because I was in the rooms afterwards and it felt like the air in the room went from excitement or relief, jubilation, and then I felt like the Maynard situation hit and the temperature changed. We'll get to that in a sec. Forward line has been a lot different. 2 years ago, you guys finished bottom of the ladder. And you might have been thinking that your premiership chances were genuinely over at that. You're an old man, 34, I think, at the time. You finished bottom, you got a new coach. To reflect on the journey broadly, do you think you'd be here? Did you genuinely think, Buckley out the door, a new coach in Craig McRae, untried, you're 34, that you'd be back in this spot?
Yeah, you're always optimistic. Like every preseason you go into, you're optimistic of what can happen. But at that time when
your glasses want to be so full, it's overflowing.
So, but like that time, obviously, I think we were, did we finish last? Second last?
Second last.
Whatever it was. Yeah, not a great year.
Already coughed up the top pick.
Yeah, new coaches come in. In your mind, you're sort of like, this usually takes time. But with our list, I sort of thought, if we get healthy, we've got some good senior experience, we're going to get a new system, a new way to play, it will take time. So I haven't, there's no way I would have thought we would have grown as quickly as we had. But this is what happens when you don't put limits on yourself or don't, you know, we're just trying to get better. And Fly says all the time, we're just trying to get better every day. Mm. Why put a ceiling on something? Because you just never know. Like, you see it with the Giants this year. It's like they were 3-7. Mm. Everyone's sort of, they've been all right. They're competitive in games. You have a look at them now. It's like they've grown so much across one season. A new coach, it takes time to learn a system. Yeah, and I'm, extremely grateful for where we've been since Fly's come in. You know, prelim last year into another prelim this year. They're so hard to get into. So, yeah, I'm certainly stoked that I stuck around.
I wasn't sure you'd be back here, mate. But I tell you what, there's room left yet in your trophy cabinet for another premiership. What an extraordinary story that would be. Speaking of growth, Bobby Hill, I didn't know. When he came to Collingwood, I thought he was an inconsistent footballer. I think he was a patchy footballer. He had skill and class and speed, and that's possibly something that you guys were looking to really make the most of. And then he comes out and plays a game like that.
Yeah, he was unbelievable. And even his first few pressure acts, you know, he got Lever in the goal square, which super tackle, just the energy and excitement he generates. And then he's, as you said, the skill and the class shone through, like the finish, the little dribbler, set shot. The thing that's probably surprised me the most with him, and I didn't watch a hell of a lot of him when he was at GWS, is just his work rate, like how high he gets back to defend and then how hard he gets back forward. Like there's bits of play where he's in the back line helping us get it out, and then all of a sudden he's on the end of Checker's kick going back in.
Yeah.
Like that's pure gut running. So yeah, he's been awesome since he's come to the club. I think the club identified we needed, you know, some more pace and speed and class in that front half, and he's delivered in spades on Thursday night.
The polish stood up in some big moments in front of a 94,000. It was incredible. The other guy I thought was massive. It's almost a John Brown moment, Daniel McStay. He was nowhere in the first half. He'd hardly touched it. And then
we had to sit out 20-something minutes of the first half, didn't he?
He did cop it, the Jacob Van Rooyen.
Yeah. But even, like, because he passed all his tests and stuff, but you still have to sit out, isn't it, for the a lot of time.
The scat test.
Yeah.
So then he comes on, Tom Mitchell slaps that high ball in the third quarter. He'd already kicked one.
Yeah. He just kicked one, didn't he?
Yes, kicked one, because Melbourne are coming at this point, right?
Yeah.
High ball goes up, he runs back with the flight. Not dissimilar to Quainter, the courage in that moment to stand up. Probably when he's feeling...
Yeah, his confidence, like his glass of confidence, wouldn't have been overflowing. It's probably like simmering because he just had a good moment, felt good. But
what did it feel like out there when he
I was in line with it when it happened, as in like a sort of 30 metres away trailing down. And he set himself to go early. And he's so good in the air, Dan. It's probably an underrated part of his game. And then I thought just initially, I was like, this is great. He's going to go. He'll create a contest and this will just spill. Bring the ball to ground. Let's see what can happen. And then when he gloved it and actually stuck, I was like, that is incredible. Like he had no idea what's coming.
No.
And like marked it. And then the best thing about it too is he goes back, composing himself straight through the middle. As you said, they're big moments in games. Like it's finals footy. To go out there and think you're going to have like just a game where you kill it all game and everything goes well, it's just unrealistic. They're very rare in finals that you have one of those days where it's just on.
Yep.
But you do have those moments where you can change a game, and I certainly felt like he had a couple of those.
I admire the cohesion. They're two new players we're talking about. Yeah. You know, clubs and coaches talk all the time about it takes a while to implement a new system. We've got new players. And then Hill and McStay, you know, Mitchell's involved in that play as well, been important. And it comes together. But I think the biggest story in some time is Braden Maynard, who we had on a couple of weeks ago. We all admire him. He plays on the edge. Where were you as Brayshaw takes the ball, comes streaming forward, and then Brayshaw launches for the smother.
I was giving Geordie a spray for the centre bounce.
What did he do?
That's when he hurt his knee. I didn't realise he hurt his knee, but he sort of half slipped over. It wasn't in the spot he should have been. And I was like, Geordie, what the? And then I realised he hurt his knee. So then I was turned head down, chase, seen Brayshaw kick, seen Brazzy flying off the square to try and affect the kick, make him kick over hands. So then my head was just down, so sort of Brazzy flew up in the air, Brayshaw's through. I was just thinking, get back, help out.
Yep.
And then I don't sort of remember the play. Did they mark it or was it just a down the field free?
Oh, no, I can't remember if it was marked.
Then I pretty much just remember turning around and it was sort of like a melee in the middle.
Yep.
It's like, what's happened here? And then I quickly realised Brayshaw was down.
Yep.
But because we're at the game, and I like that this happens, they don't show it on the screens anymore. They used to show it on the screens.
Were you looking for the replay?
Everyone was. You could see the Melbourne guys were... because everyone's sort of like, what happened? Because when you're watching, everyone watches the ball. So like, I doubt there would have been many players who would have been like, I know exactly what happened. And Brazzy's going, I've tried to smother it. Or I seen him jump in the air and like, he was a bee's dick away from smothering that footy. So, yeah, and then sort of like, oh, what's happened? And then, yeah, you don't see it until after the game. And, yeah, it's a, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like anything that I say, it's always going to be biased, isn't it? But like, you're a Collingwood player. Clearly, I want him to get off, but I feel like
you've been playing the game for 20 years, and I know there's the concussion landscape at the moment. I mean, I think the AFL essentially overruled the initial sort of not guilty verdict in the first place to make sure this gets tested at the tribunal. But just okay, take the colour of the jumpers out of it. You're playing in this all the time. It's a collision game. It is a contact sport.
Yeah.
What was, now that you've seen it, what is your view of the incident?
Yeah, well, I feel like from how we play, like he's made, like, so we, like, you need pressure on that footy. So come hard forward, try and smother it. Like he missed that by centimetres.
Yeah.
So that to me is a footy play.
Yeah.
It's not like he's jumped off the air with not even attempting to smother it. Like if he, and then this is one for you, if he touched that, like, so he's missed that by say 5 centimetres. If he had to touch that and the same outcome happens,
I don't know
what happens.
Yeah, I don't know that you can suspend him if he touches the footy, because then he genuinely has impacted the play. Yeah. So how can that be careless? I mean, you're sort of you're playing on the football. You're not striking. It wasn't even a deliberate or an intentional bump.
Yeah. So because he misses it by 5 centimetres, are we saying that it's not a footy act?
Well, the question is, whether it's a football act or not, do you have a duty of care to the other player in that situation? When your feet leave the ground and you're vertical in line at high velocity, and you know you're going to land somewhere on or near him, do you have a duty of care in that moment?
Yeah.
And that's essentially pulling out or changing that smothering attempt, you know, because the consequences could be that you take the opposition player
and
out.
I say this all the time then. So my answer to that is, and it's, first, like, it's funny because when that happens, right, your first thing is like, I think everyone feels it's like you actually hope Brayshaw is okay, because it's more than just a game. So we're like, I hope this guy's okay. Like, he's had a couple of concussions. I hope he's fine. But like, when he doesn't move for a while, you just sort of like, you know, hope he's okay. And then he gives the thumbs up. And, you know, I know Brazzy went and seen him on the weekend. They used to play juniors and stuff together.
Hampton Rovers.
But then it's like, then if you sort of remove that, if I go for a specky and knee you in the back of the head, do I have a duty of care?
It's a great point. Well, no, you don't get penalised for that.
Why?
Because it's part of the game.
So is running to jump and smother part of the game?
I would have thought so.
Yeah, so that's like, that's my views on it.
Yeah.
That I think, like, he come with an intent to smother the ball.
Yeah.
Clearly, because he's jumped and he's missed it. As I said,
yep.
I was really close to it. He's missed that by centimetres. And if he touches that, we're lording. Like, imagine if that saved us a centre bounce goal.
We're talking about one of the best defensive acts of the year.
Smothers that.
Yep.
And even, like, impacting the play. Like, he's forced Brayshaw out of a centre bounce to kick over hands high to get above Bruz, forces a high ball, which is what our backs want. That's the whole, every side would want that. Yep. Like, they've got a midfielder, it's our worst nightmare in the centre bounce. We'll just talk about midfielder streaming out the centre of the ground.
Mm.
If we don't press that, he knocks that over from 50.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's crazy. What, like, you're the guru on this. You don't get them wrong. Well, you are.
this is going to be replayed. I think he will get off. I think it's a tough call. I think it's a really tough call. One of the toughest I've seen in years. I think whether it's Tuesday or at the appeals hearing on Thursday, I think he will get off, because when he leaves the ground, it is a full-blooded attempt to play at the ball. And then when he lands, I know, and this will be frame by frame, slowed down, degrees he does turn and make contact with his right shoulder. And so the question the tribunal will be, well, what alternative did he have? And that's, in that moment, I guess he's got to put his hands out to try and soften his landing. If that's an intra-club game, Scott, would he have had a softer landing? He could have put his hands out,
It's like saying, like, if this is Auskick, it's not an intra-club game.
Yeah.
Like, intra-club game, no one goes back with a flight. No one tackles to ground.
Yeah. Once
you're in the air and your hands are up and you run at me, I'm not just staying like this and being like, let's just see what happens.
Well, then you leave your, but then two players are vulnerable.
Yeah. But it's like, you can almost see both of them try and pull out at the last second and protect themselves. That's why they both skittled each other too. Like, high-speed collision.
Yeah. It's got to be fascinating. How's Bruzzy going? Have you touched base with Braden?
No, I haven't spoke to him since. I feel like everyone would be...
Hound him.
Yeah, and it's, as you know, like it's going to be very public story. And
It'll be difficult for him.
Yeah, of course it would be. Like, because it's a mate of his that it's happened to.
Yep.
Like, clearly he's gone and seen him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's just decompressed. Hopefully he's staying away from, like, social media, things like that. But, yeah, it's going to be huge. And the repercussions of missing out on potentially the rest of the final series versus being part of it, every footballer's dream is to be playing this time of year.
And to be absolutely clear, we are thinking of Angus Brayshaw in this moment. His September could be over. He is a long concussion history. There is a lot of uncertainty around this whole issue right across football. It is the biggest story in the game. Angus Brayshaw is an absolute beauty. He didn't want or mean for this to happen, obviously. So we are thinking 100% of him. Braden's gone around and touched base, and we hope that Angus can recover as quickly as possible. How were the rooms after the game? Did you? That was the buzz. Your family was there, saw Alex.
Yeah, well, I think because the game got tight, it turned like the buzz. Everyone was excited. Because when it gets really tight like that, I think everyone invests into the game a little bit more.
Yep.
The rooms were amazing. It's your worst nightmare, isn't it? Tight games. So how does it work for you with your stories that you have to write?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to have it in when?
On the siren. You got to have your story done on the siren. So, which is nightmarish.
So what happens last year when we win on the siren?
Yeah, it's you got to, like, I've deleted whole stories before with like 5 minutes to go to change it. Like I did the worst. I nearly gave the whole caper away after the Nick Davis game. Remember when Nick Davis beat
Geelong in the final?
Yeah.
06.
And he kicked 4 goals in the last quarter, right? So to start that last quarter, the Cats are up by 25 points. My whole story is about they've won on the road and they're going to win through to the preliminary final, blah, blah, blah. Nick Davis kicks one. It's like, well, yeah, Nick Davis kicks
one. So what do you have, like, 2 Word documents open?
Basically. And you're flipping from one. So my story, McStay took that mark, right? And then after Bobby Hill's opening, my story was all about the McStay moment, running back with the flight. We discussed it before. You know, when he came to Collingwood, everyone thought, oh, he's on too much money, 600. He's not a big banana. He's not a number one. He's not a spearhead. You know, why would Collingwood be going after this guy? But now you see the way, and the story goes on to explain the different parts. It's come together, the cohesion. And in that moment, McStay stands up, and Collingwood fans love him, and he feels like he belongs, blah, blah, that sort of stuff. But then as Melbourne come back, I got to write a second story about the comeback.
How many words? Like, is there a word?
600.
600.
600
so
words.
So as the game's going, you're trying to watch and punch out.
Yes, yes. And then you start writing a second one. So the second story then becomes about the inside 50 count and how they had you pinned down and then, they, you know, they finally break through. So that becomes...
Did you even get to watch the game when it's close at the end?
It does become tricky. It does become tricky. You've got to try and watch the game and type as you go along. And I'm not the world's best touch typer. So it's like that takes years off your life. That's why afterwards I go home. I can't sleep, Scott.
You'd be as wide as what we would be then if it's close.
I've got to have 3 glasses of Shiraz just to calm myself down. But then afterwards you sort of go home, you write a big analysis piece, sort of 1,200 words on then the Melbourne melee. What do they do with a forward connection? How do they fist the structure? Van Ruyen's going to be out. What does Goodwin do? Is this the biggest coaching challenge of his life? Does Grundy come in? Do they break glass?
Do you go both press conferences post-game?
Yes, I did.
And does this form some of your insight with the questions you ask about, say, Melbourne's forward stuff? Do you ask that and then that helps your story?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that forms part of it. Did you hear the cheeky clip from, remember Craig McRae said at a press conference throughout the week, oh, I'll see you in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a story, Sammy Lansberg wrote a story about, oh, that's offended Melbourne. And then, so Collingwood are victorious, and just as Craig McRae exits the door, he says,
see you in a few weeks.
See you in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Well, I love him
great
for that.
Great personality.
But there's 2 styles, isn't there? Because that's the, from my perspective, that's, and look, I mean, I went to work on Thursday night. I couldn't have been more excited.
Yeah.
Like it's pretty fortunate.
Yeah, yeah.
I went to the MCG and that was my office. Yeah. And then I get to speak to people like yourself and Craig McRae. Like like you just remind yourself how lucky you are in that sort of situation, as stressful as it can get.
Well, this is why you're number one.
Maybe my
lunchbox.
Everyone
might know what we're talking about here, but you have a leaderboard at the Herald Sun, do you not?
We
rankings, like a ladder.
We measure the data as closely as you guys do.
And the data doesn't lie. as Ross Lyon says, the trend's your friend.
Yes, it does.
And where do you sit on the trend's your friend leaderboard?
I've forgotten.
You're sitting high. Number one. You're the number one man. Well, this isn't celebrated enough.
You got to get to the contest, Scott. You got to get to the contest. Good things happen when you track the football.
Absolutely.
It is a privileged position. But I did have the pleasure of – I mean, that's one form of footy journalism. And people ask me all the time, what's your gig like? It was something very different a couple of weeks ago when I spoke to Chris Fagan for a bit more of a sit-down interview about his year from hell.
Yeah.
And where Thursday night is, you know, just completely stressful, tight deadline. You're doing it as the game goes on. With Chris Fagan, I sat down with him for an hour at the Pullman Hotel on the morning of their round 23 win over you guys. Round 23 or round 24?
Second last game of the year.
So he's playing, he's coaching that night. And the day of the game, he sits down with me. We talk about his year. Obviously, there's the whole Hawthorn scandal. And I mean, at one point we stopped the interview because he became so emotional talking about, you know, the toll and the difficulty and the conversations with his Indigenous players when all those reports came forward. So because of the whole legal processes, some stuff he wasn't able to say, but he hasn't been able to say really anything at all up until now. But then, you know,
they're months in the works, those story, aren't they? Because I think, like for me, general punters, where you just open the newspaper.
Yeah.
And, I would just think naturally, well, now that I know the industry a bit better because of you, I understand how much work goes in. But I reckon most people would think if it's in there Saturday, you spoke to him during the week and just punched it out. And I was surprised. It was 4 months of work for that story.
That's when I first asked him.
Yeah.
And then, but that's because I've known Chris for a long time. Yeah. So he hasn't, there is an element of trust there, which is what it's all about. Like university students say, what's the key here? What's the secret? It's like relationships, you know, like it took Graham Wright 10 years
to return my call. It's goodbye, Wrighty.
10 years, Wrighty, a decade. Yeah. I'd gone grey in that time.
Yeah.
So it does take a long time. And, talking about his whole life in football and his year, obviously, which was really challenging for him. He sort of talked about not being able to go for his walk, you know, his daily walk in the daylight because, you know, he didn't know what reaction. And we know Jordan Lewis said that Alistair Clarkson went to a service station and didn't get served because of it, right? So Chris Fagan, worried about that sort of situation. But it all come together. He was happy. I think he got a look at the story before it went to print, and he was...
How did he feel about it?
He was great. He texted me the next morning and said, thanks very much.
Yeah.
Normally when I walk past Lee Matthews in the MCG Media Centre, he's always very polite. Hi, Lethal. Hello, Jay. And we sort of keep walking. On Thursday night, I said, he stopped me. Yes. Jay, great story. So I got a bit of time on the Lethal. Yeah. So that's a special moment for me to sound completely egotistical. But that's how it all comes to be together. It is one of the great jobs, and I should never take for granted how lucky I am, Scott.
There you go. Insight into the mind of a number one.
Yes.
Number one banana.
Will we?
Charlie Kernow.
You.
Hmm? You're like the Charlie Kernow of the footy media industry.
Is that right?
The number one banana.
I don't think I'm quite as electric as Charlie Kernow.
Yeah.
Woo! Right, that has been a big start to the Jock and Jerno podcast. He's sitting pretty in a preliminary final. I wonder who you'll play in that cutthroat. You have history with
GWS or Port, I reckon, will play.
Oh, really? This is a comedy show all of a sudden. We're going to talk about that. You've got history with the Giants. You are on one. We're going to talk about it in a second.
Not really, but
yes, you do. That's coming up next on the Jock and Jerno podcast. Welcome back to the Jock and Jerno podcast with Jay Clark and the Collingwood champ, the grandpa, it's Scotty Pendlebury. Who's going to win the semi-finals? Who do you think you're going to play? Is it Carlton, Melbourne Friday night?
Yeah.
Or Adelaide host GWS Saturday night?
Geez, it's always the funny one, isn't it? Because I feel like you always get the two sides that lose, you look at their sort of negatives and why they didn't win. And the two sides that win, you look at all their strengths and positives and you think they can't be beaten the next week.
Mm-hmm.
History says usually the two sides that lose in the first week go on to win the next week.
Yeah, well, Melbourne got bounced out in straight sets.
But it's not that – it doesn't happen that often.
Yep. So what are you calling?
Yeah, I feel like the – I don't know if I'm calling it, but I reckon the Thursday – the Friday night game, the Carlton-Melbourne one.
Yep.
I feel like that would be a kick in it either way.
Yep.
Like, do I have to make a tip?
Yep.
I'll say Melbourne. I'll just go on history side.
Yep.
So Melbourne. I think Jack Martin's a really big out, and so is Harry McKay. Like I think two out of your forward line, your dynamics, mm-hmm. that changes a lot. Like,
yep.
And Jack Martin played extremely well the other night in front and behind the ball.
Yep.
And then the Port Giants game.
On that Carlton Melbourne game, I feel like it's going to be stay out of Charlie Kuno's way and for Melbourne, stay out of Christian Petrarca's way. Because he started forward, then went more in the midfield once Brayshaw went out. I feel like he's going to be the most threatened. Without Van Rooyen, you know, they're going to patch a forward line together.
Are they challenging that Melbourne or no? Did they?
I don't think so. I don't think he'll get off anyway.
Yeah.
So he's out. Will they pick Grundy? Would you expect him to pick Grundy?
Well, they need a taller target down there, don't they?
Yeah.
Who rucked for? Was it Van Rooyen that rucked with Max out on the bench?
Yeah, a little bit. Joel Smith.
Yeah. So, mate, I don't know what they'll do. So,
yeah.
And then the other game, the Giants are playing amazing footy. Like
tsunami.
Yeah, they are. They're playing so well. But then
the tsunami?
Well, they've always been the tsunami, haven't they? Orange tsunami.
In terms of the style of play.
It's just forward footy contests. Chaos, a bit of the Kingsley Richmond, a bit of the Richmond style. But then they've got
Rolls Royces.
Oh yeah, everywhere.
Whitfield.
Kelly was unbelievable.
I thought he played the game of his life, Josh Kelly.
There's that left foot goal he kicked on the boundary in the third, was it?
Yeah.
And he got it, and I was watching. I was like, he'll kick this. He'll knock this over. He just does it all the time, and then kicked it, and then nonchalantly just run back to the middle like I was just out in front 10 metres. he's a superstar. And then they look really dangerous. They look really in sync. So it's going to be a great game. But then, a few weeks ago, Port beat them by 50 there. So, and that's the thing with home ground advantage in these things. That means a lot. But then, I said, Giants would have learnt so many lessons that it will be a finals game, tight game. So I'm looking forward to them both.
They could both go either way. Just that class of halfback for GWS. They win on the road. I think they've won at 11 or 12 different venues now, including the MCG
this
weekend. Yes.
That's crazy. Like, just imagine their schedule then.
Yes.
Like, we think it's travel if we have to go to Marvel. they played 11 different venues. I know people don't, you probably don't put the emphasis it should be on that, but playing at that many different grounds, the grounds are different.
Yep.
It's not like basketball where the courts are all the same.
Yep.
So these grounds are significantly different. You've got to play them different ways.
Yep.
It's an incredible run they've had.
Have you ever even been in the other MCG change rooms?
No, never.
Ever?
No.
You've been in?
I've been in the same ones every time.
That's a...
Silver platter stuff, isn't it?
Collingwood football. Hey, will we be reporting on another Collingwood grand final? You got so close in 2018, Scott.
Yes, we did. 5 points. Can't get much closer.
And you sunk to the bottom ends of the earth a couple of years ago. Yeah. Can you be back there? What a story it will be. We will have every twist and turn, every emotion covered on the Jock and Jerno podcast. You like that?
Absolutely. Well done. That's what I said, mate. You're the number one man. This could be called the Jerno show soon.
What are you doing this week?
Normal prep for us this week. So we got training after this go in. We got training this afternoon.
Yep.
And then I assume... This is just having a stab of the dark, but we'll have a main session Thursday, Friday, try and mimic some game loads for the week after.
Yep.
There won't be an internal game or anything, I don't think so, but there could be.
Yeah.
To get ready and then the weekend off. Yep.
What are you going to do with your weekend off?
Might go to the Gold Class, watch a movie.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oppenheimer?
Yeah, I heard that's amazing, isn't it? So go there. Went to Gold Class last week with Alex. She booked the tickets online, rocked up to Southland. She had the Gold Class tickets ready to go for High Point at a wrong time. So that went down like a lead balloon. So we're at Southland ready for Equalizer 3 at 6 o'clock. Yep. Their next showing was 7:30.
Tricky.
So we ended up going to Chadstone to watch it. So a little date night, spanner in the works. Thanks, Alex.
All good. All right. Thanks for listening to us on the Jock and Jerno podcast. We are going to have another big show next week as we build up to the preliminary final, Collingwood versus. Who will it be? We'll find out this weekend. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Cheers.
Listener.